So today we are celebrating the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, which is approximately 1 million years ago that the Lord appeared into this world. So it's been a long time since the celebrations have been going on, but by no means have they slowed down. It's still going in full force, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever present, and there's no question that Lord Ramachandra can be considered to be a personality of the past, 1 million years ago. No, Lord Ramachandra is as much present today as he was 1 million years ago, or as he ever was, because he's eternally present, both here in the material and in the spiritual world. Still, apparently, Lord Ramachandra appeared in this world like the son of Dasarath, King Dasarath. It's described in the Ramayana how King Dasarath was a powerful warrior. Kings in those days were not like modern-day rulers who send their soldiers out to the battlefield and themselves stay safely at home. No, the king himself would be in front in the battle, leading the charge, and therefore kings were generally great heroic personalities. And Dasarath was outstanding. He got that name of Dasarath, which means literally 10 chariots. 10 chariots because, according in the Vedic analysis, there are 10 directions. North, south, east, west, the directions in between, and upwards and downwards. And that more or less covers the entire spectrum of directions. Therefore, Dasarath meant he who simultaneously can fight in all directions. That was Dasarath. Dasarath lived in his capital, Ayodhya, in great opulence. And he stood on a balcony, on a raised portion of his large palace, which had many terraces and towers and so on, and he was overlooking the city of Ayodhya, and he had everything he could desire, everything except one thing. One thing was causing him great anxiety. Therefore, Dasarath, although looking upon his glorious city, his loving subjects, decided to go down to the assembly hall. And as he came down and entered the royal gates, near the entrance, there was a man seated with a very, very large drum who had sticks of 2 meters long with balls on it, and he was beating the drum on the rhythm of the steps of the king. And the king, in royal fashion, walked down the aisle, and everywhere people stood up and smiled and were happy to receive him. When the king was properly seated on an ornate throne, and everyone had sat down and become quiet, then the king address the assembly to discuss that one thing that was on his mind, namely that he didn't have a son. Everything's boiled. What to do? So in this way, Dasarath was experiencing anxiety. That was his final desire, and somehow or other, up to this point, it had not happened. But while in the assembly of wise ministers, finally it was decided that a sacrifice was to be performed. But it became clear that this sacrifice, in order to be successful, had to be performed by one who was perfectly celibate. So, you know, even 1 million years ago, that wasn't so simple. That wasn't exactly. And perfectly celibate meant who had always been celibate throughout life. You know, where you find such personalities. So it was very difficult. But there was one person. There was a sage. And this sage, somehow or other, by some act of fate, had received a son. And this son was brought up as a brahmachari. The sage, with his mystic power, was residing in a forest along with his son. And he had made sure that there was no female influence in the forest whatsoever. There were no female birds. Right? It's like he had made sure that all female influence was completely out of the forest. And in this way, his son grew up like a perfect brahmachari. So they decided that this brahmachari had to be the one to do the sacrifice. But in order to be ordained as a priest, really, he had to be married. Yeah, so they desired to get him married. And they devised a plan. They arranged that the sage was invited for some important sacrifice and so on. And meanwhile, the brahmachari was alone. And then they sent this personality, also dressed like a brahmachari, on a raft down the river. So the river was flowing into the forest, and on this, over the raft, then floated along that river, and on that raft there was a personality that could sing in such an amazing way, dressed like in the typical tree bark dress of a brahmachari. This personality was singing, and our brahmachari had never before heard such singing. It's just amazed. This is extraordinary. It was, of course, a beautiful girl dressed up like brahmachari. And anyway, in this way, our brahmachari was not brahmachari anymore. What can be said to brahmacharis? Are vulnerable, must be protected. So the father was quite upset when he found that, but anyway, they pacified him somehow or other, and then this personality performed the sacrifice. Within this sacrifice, of course, there was payas, and then somehow or other, it is that that's sweet rice that is handed over by some personality who appeared in the yajna, and Dasara divided it over his wives. And they had various sons. The eldest wife, Kushalya, she had Lord Ramachandra as her son. And otherwise, there was the other sons, Laxman, Bharat, Satrughna, were born from the other wives. So in this way, various sons appeared. Ramachandra had all good qualities. It was just amazing. He learned very quickly. He was very learned in the Vedas. He was very expert in fighting various weapons. He was noble, honest, humble, determined, courageous. I mean, any good quality could be found with him. In this way, Ramachandra was the pleasure for his father. There was just nothing more wonderful than having this son. And then, we know the son went out to meet, he was taken first by Vishwamrita, a great sage who came one day and said to Dasarath, he came to beg for charity. Dasarath said, yes, anything you desire, whatever it is, I want your son. My son? Not my son. Yes, I need your son. There are certain demons and they are defiling sacrifices and we need to deal with them. Not my son, he's only a boy. I will do it myself. No, I need your son. Anyway, so Lakshman accompanied him, both went. The sage Vishwamrita taught them various mantras and taught them to fight with powerful demons. And so they did. And there, and shortly after, they went to the Swayamvar of Sita. A Swayamvar is a situation where a princess can choose her own husband. But the candidates have to come and have to show that they have power. So they have to pass different tests and have to fight. So in this case, there was a bow that was in the family. It was a bow of Lord Shiva. And it was quite big, that bow. It took 300 men to lift it. And so the bow was brought in on carts, and it was just there. And, you know, whoever wanted to marry Sita would have to, string the bow, would have to string the bow. Yeah. That was the situation. And, of course, no one could do that. Great prince was tried, but they couldn't even lift it. But Ramachandra easily lifted that bow, easily. And not only strung the bow, but then pulled it and then broke it. And it gave a loud bang. So in this way he gained Sita and everything seemed very wonderful. But then on the way, Parasaram came. Parasaram is one of the Chiranjivas. There are various Chiranjivas personalities who live through the yugas, who live a very long time. So Parasaram came. And Parasaram was very disturbed that the bow of Shiva had been broken by some Kshatriya and he was ready to deal with him. All right, so you broke that bow and you are so powerful, isn't it? Well, just see. And but then Parasaram had some doubt. There was also a bow of Vishnu. And then as a test, just to show if he was really then Vishnu, if he could string that bow as well, no problem. Strung that in this way. He avoided a fight and established himself to Parasaram as the Supreme Lord, who then bowed down and left. So in this way, the stage was set. Now Lord Ramachandra brought back a beautiful bride, and everything was just ready for glory and for a celebration, and it was just a beautiful time. And now Dasarath's desires were really, really, really fulfilled. His son, now also married to an equally beautiful princess, a perfect match. And now it was his desire to place them on the throne. And just then, it was a glorious day. Because not only the king, but the entire kingdom was celebrating. Then, somehow or other, the youngest queen of King Dasarath was she was somehow or other not too happy about the occasion. She felt that her own position was being threatened, and therefore once, long ago, she had received a benediction from her husband. She had helped him in a battle, and she'd received the benediction that she had two wounds. And on this day, she decided to use her two wounds, and she asked for them. She asked her husband, "Remember how once you granted me these boons?" "Oh yes, I do. Of course, I remember how much you assisted me that day, oh my dear one. I do remember. Yes. Well, my dear husband, remember how you said that you would give me anything I desired." "Of course, anything you desire, my darling, anything you desire. Whatever it is, consider it yours." "All right. My desire is that your son Ram will be banished to the forest for 14 years and that my son Bharat will be placed on the throne and crowned king instead." Dasarath, who had been so infatuated with his beautiful young wife, suddenly felt as if bitten by a snake, as if shot in the heart with an arrow. Dasarath was now completely so shocked by the whole situation, his mind spinning at racing speed, looking for a way out, and he couldn't find a way out. He was thinking, maybe I will just break my word. But how could he break his word? Because, of course, he could break his word. 1,000 times he could break his word if it was for keeping his son. And he would have rather sent her to the forest. "Huh? No, you go, you woman. You go to the forest. I'll keep my son here." But how could he do it? Because his whole life was dedicated as a father to teach his son perfectly. And how could he teach his son not to hold, to keep his word? And he knew, if I will not keep my word, then what reason will my son have to keep his? I cannot break my word. In other words, there was no way out. And therefore, Dasarath, in utter depression, didn't know what to say. He became speechless, and tears were streaming down his cheeks. And in this way, the entire situation unfolded. And everyone heartbroken, everyone upset, but Ram, completely calm, completely detached, the only one who's happy in the cause of all the misery. And Ram was ready to go to the forest. He was ready to take Sita along. She insisted to come. This morning I told it in full color and can't do it twice in one day. So that one, if you were there, you were there. If not, you were not there. Why can't be said? But so then, when Lord Ramachandra went to the forest, Lakshman also came, because wherever he went, Lakshman would stay. It was, it's not easy, because forests are dangerous places with wild animals, and we see in the Ramayana that there are various personalities described, and it begins with actually descriptions of Rakshasas who are flying through the sky. There's this big plane and it is flying in the sky, and next to it there are many other personalities. They're flying through the sky, and in the golden plane is the king of the Rakshasas, Ravana, flying. Yes. And he's very satisfied because he just stole the golden chariot from his brother Kuvira, which is a very wonderful chariot. It can move around at will. And they are just roaming around the skies and disturbing various sages and laughing. And sometimes they swoop down from the sky and they just jump on brahmanas performing a sacrifice, and they just spoil the whole sacrifice and just kill everyone and eat the flesh of the brahmanas. So, I mean, it's kind of intense if you hear about that, flying man-eaters in the sky. I mean, if this is Chaitanya holding hands, somehow getting nervous now. I see, yes, flying man-eaters in the sky. This was going on in the Treta Yuga. So how is it possible? Isn't Kali Yuga, the current age, the worst of all? And if we don't have this yet in Kali Yuga, flying cannibals, then what are we gonna, then how is it in Treta Yuga? Well, it is said, not only were the devotees more powerful in Treta Yuga, but also the demons were more powerful. So now, you know, like they're just wimps, that's all, you know, they're afraid of flying, you know. But still demons. Now they do everything via the internet. There was an exchange via the internet where one man was posted that he was looking for someone to eat. And someone finally volunteered and made an agreement, and it took place. Having via the internet. So everything goes on via the internet now. But in those days, it was happening with real access. And it is said that not only was Ravana engaged in this way, but Ravana also was quite eager to test his prowess in all directions. Somehow or other, though, in the course of all these activities, Ravana got himself in trouble. He got quite a few curses on his head from powerful personalities. He got cursed that a beautiful woman would become the cause of his death. He got cursed that monkeys would defeat him. He got cursed in many ways. So the curses that Ravana had on his head all came true in the end. Because no matter how powerful one is, yes, one must understand that the power that we have is given to us. No one can claim that whatever power we have, that it is ours, that it is our property. My strength, for as long as it lasts. My brain, until the worms eat it. Also, this morning I described how in the kingdom of Lord Ramachandra there were no diseases, unlike these days. Because these days, you know, right? You look at normal people, and this one has a hole in his heart, and that one has a missing kidney, and someone else is half blind, and again, someone else has a worm in his brain. That's quite common, actually. So I have been told by doctors. A lot of people have worms in their brain, and the worms eat holes in the brain. And then, of course, you know, what was that again? The hole in the brain. You think, like, I'm beginning to forget so much these days, you know. It's just because the worms are eating your brain. Anyway, just to make you feel better. You don't need any medical advice. True. What can be said? But at the time of Lord Ramachandra, when he was ruling,
there was no disease in the entire kingdom. So we definitely see that the setting is a very different time. Underlying the story of the Ramayana is, of course, that when Ram and Sita were residing in the forest, that Sita was kidnapped by Ravana. How did it happen? Well, it started that in these forests, many Rakshasas were living, and Lord Ramachandra, he became involved in a big battle with them and killed a very large portion. Because, and then subsequently after that, there was Ravana's sister, who was very beautiful. At least her nose is known as to be someone on the long side, and she was also feasting on human flesh. Anyway, she became attracted to Lord Ramachandra, who said no, he could not accept her because taken a vow to have only one wife, so then she was ready to kill the wife. Yeah. But then he said, no, actually, you know, Lakshman is much more attractive than me. So then she went for Lakshman. And then, of course, we know that they ultimately cut her nose when she tried to kill Sita. Well, that was the cause where she wanted to take revenge. And she went to Ravana, and she knew her brother very well. She knew him very well. She knew that Ravana had a great weakness when it came to women. Therefore, she first of all asked Ravana to take revenge. But she also knew that Ravana was so selfish that he didn't have that kind of family affection that he would really go to battle to revenge his sister. But if there was some personal gain in the whole matter for him, then he would. And therefore, she manipulated him and said, yes, this Ram has done this to me. And I said, how can he do this to me? And yes, a human did this to you. Inconceivable. Let him killed this man. It's like, yes, and he's very powerful. Human, very powerful. Yes, he killed all these powerful Rakshasas. Killed a whole army of Rakshasas. So Ravana was somewhat like, what is this? You know, some human creature has done all this. And then said, yes, and his wife is the most beautiful woman on the planet. Bing! Ravana woke up. Really? Oh yes, what does she look like? And the description of Sita sounds indeed interesting. All right. We will not tolerate this. This onslaught has taken place against our family. We will personally take action. And Ravana decided to personally take the matter in his hand. Well, we know that Ravana arranged it all in a tricky way. He sent his good old friend Maharishi to take a form of a golden deer. Oh, Ram, look at that beautiful deer. I think it's a demon. Oh, come on, Ram, I really want that as my pet, such a beautiful deer. Ramachandra went to follow that demon, didn't trust it, told Lakshman to safeguard Sita. But then, and he chased that deer, and when he came close to the deer, he didn't capture it for Sita, he shot the deer! Just like that. But that deer was Maharishi, that disguised himself, and with his last breath, he managed to call out the name of Sita with the voice of Ram
It sounded exactly like Ram. So he said, oh, Lakshma,
go and help Ram. Yeah,
okay. So this part is all going on, and we see that finally Lakshman said, no, I cannot go, I've got orders to stay here. Then she said, now I understand. You want to enjoy me for yourself. So, you know, Lakshman was deeply hurt by that. And in this way, Lakshman went. He drew this circle around her to protect her. As long as you stay in this tribe, you'll be protected. Anyway, Lakshman gone, Ram gone, and Ravana came in the dress of a sannyasi and asked for some water. And she said, it's there, just take it. It's like, you know, you cannot give to a sadhu. So anyway, she sort of reached out, gave, then he pulled her out of her protective circle. And she was kidnapped. So this is the main theme of the Ramayana, trying to recover Sita from captivity, trying to find out where she went, and then there's a fight at Jatayu, some vulture who was actually devoted to Ram, fought with Lakshman, with Ravana, but was defeated. And just before he died, he was able to say he went to the south. That was it. Sita kidnapped to the south. Well, I thought if you try to tell the whole Ramayana, you can't really cover it. And still I wanted to sort of tell the Ramayana. So I just sketched the basic scene. And I thought to go by personalities and tell some things about different personalities. I did already a little bit about Ravana, sort of got an idea that he was very qualified, but at the same time a flesh eater, a human flesh eater. So that was kind of heavy. He had his golden city in Lanka, Sri Lanka. And probably explained that there was a tunnel from there all the way to South America, and that they were taking their gold from South America. And in this way, he built an entirely golden city. So there are so many important personalities in the pastimes, but undoubtedly Hanuman is a key person. When Ram and Lakshman went to the south to start looking for Sita, at one point they came across this personality. It was Hanuman, but he had, by mystic power, taken another form. So he didn't exactly look his normal form. And when Hanuman met them, Hanuman was inquiring who they were. And since they were the visitors, they were coming to a strange place. So Hanuman came in disguise to inquire from them who they were. Then Lakshman began to speak. And Lakshman said, this is Lord Ramachandra. He is the crown prince in the Raghu dynasty. And he described his glories and glory after glory. And then he introduced himself and said, and I am his younger brother. No, he never said that. He said, and I am his servant. So yes, so that is interesting, and it shows something.
Come on, the phone. Come on, this is more space. Thank you.
it shows something about the character of Maxima, his humility and then as Hanuman spoke very expertly. Not only did Hanuman speak with the right words, but Hanuman even spoke on the right note. According to the Vedic culture, you have to speak on certain occasions at a certain note, a certain musical tone.
If your voice is too low, not good.
Your voice is too high,
not good. It must be just right. Hanuman got it perfectly right.
From that they could understand that Hanuman was a very learned, a very cultured personality. They could see, oh. Then Hanuman introduced himself as the minister of Sugriva. He brought them to Sugriva. All right, we'll backtrack for a moment about Hanuman. It is stated about the origin of Hanuman, there are many stories. When you go to the Ramayana, the complication is that there are many, many versions of the Ramayana. Especially in South India, in Tamil language, there are so many versions and they're all a little different. And some are written by Shiva Bhaktas, and then it's all about Shiva, and others are written by Vishnu Bhaktas, and then it's again different. So the stories are all different and sometimes difficult to figure out which story is the right story. Srila Prabhupada told us that the Valmiki Ramayana is authorized. It doesn't mean that all the other stories are not authorized, but more difficult to figure out what is authorized and what is not authorized. But there is the story there are a few stories about Hanuman's origin. One is the story that once Shiva and Parvati were enjoying like in the guise like monkeys, as husband and wife, but for some variety's sake they had taken the bodies of monkeys and they were chasing, jumping through the trees and so on. And I'll save you the rest of that pastime. But anyway, it led to a conception. Yes. And then, they were thinking, like, what are we going to do, you know? We're going to have a monkey child. That's such a good idea. So, they decided that they would leave that conception in some pot, some kumbha, and put it under the care of Vayu. Yeah. And Vayu, later, the maidservant of Brihaspati. She was faithfully serving Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, but one day she was daily bringing water, but when she went to the river, she also witnessed some amorous activities there, and then she herself became influenced by that, and suddenly she spontaneously kissed Brihaspati, who didn't appreciate that very much, and who cursed her for that and said that she would have to take birth as a monkey on this planet and come down from the heavenly planets and become a monkey. So she begged for forgiveness, and finally he said, all right, after you've given birth to a son, then you can return to the heavenly planets. All right, so then she performed austerities, she became a monkey, and she performed, Anjana was her name, she performed austerities to have a son, and eventually she got that pregnancy from Vayu. And after the son was born, that's when she was relieved from the curse and ready to go. So she was leaping, but then immediately Hanuman grabbed her by her cloth and said, hey, where are you going? She said, sorry, but I'm leaving. He said, oh no, you're not. You're my mother, and I'm hungry. And she said, no problem,
You just eat whatever is red and round. All right. You just eat whatever is red and round. And then she said, but I've got to go now. And then she was gone. So Hanuman was alone. And, you know, and hungry. And it was dark. It was night. And, you know, early in the morning, the sun came over the horizon. So Hanuman jumped up in the sky. And there are again different versions, but one version is that Indra, who was just enjoying with his associates and apsaras and so on, suddenly in the middle of all the enjoyment, the light went out. Someone had swallowed the sun. Right. So then Indra immediately came on his elephant, Airavata, and threw his thunderbolt, which hit the monkey on the jaw. So there are different versions. One version is that Hanuman became injured and that Vayu took him, and that Vayu also left the universe, and then everyone suffocated. The sun was safe, but then there was no air. Then to pacify everyone, they gave Hanuman a lot of benedictions. Another story is that Hanuman refused to open his mouth. And he wouldn't open his mouth, and all the demigods came and offered benedictions. They gave him benedictions that he would be invincible, not affected by this weapon, not by that weapon, long life, and so on. But he wouldn't open his mouth. And finally, Brihaspati told him that if you open your mouth, I will tell you all the secrets of different types of foodstuff. Well, since he was very hungry, he let go of the sun, and Brihaspati gave him this knowledge. It is also said that later Hanuman wanted to study the Vedas from Brihaspati, but Brihaspati told him, no, I cannot accept a monkey as my disciple, but maybe you can learn from the sun god. But the sun god was a little worried. Here was this monkey coming again. The sun god has a chariot. It is a very, very big chariot. And in this chariot, there are many, many sages. And all these sages are facing the sun god, and they're discussing the various Vedas and so on. So this, in this way, the sun is traveling around his chariot. So the sun god said, I'm very sorry, but, I would love to teach you, but unfortunately there are no empty seats. All the seats are full. The chariot's completely full, no space, sorry. When there's a vacancy, we'll let you know. We can't take any applications at the moment. So anyway, in this way, it happened. And then, but Hanuman said, no problem. I will move in front of your chariot backwards. So Hanuman just moved in front of the sun backwards, and in this way, heard all the discussions and all the instructions from the sun god, and became extremely learned in the Vedas. In this way, Hanuman became qualified to become the minister of Sugriva. Another little detail was that Sugriva had an elder brother named Bali. And this Bali already heard that that the son of Anjana might in the future become the cause of his death. So therefore, when he heard about that, he decided to arrange for an abortion. So following some ancient system, he was putting various metals in the womb of Anjana, and with that was hoping to kill the baby in the womb. But those metals combined and formed earrings, so Hanuman was born with earrings. So Bali and Sugriva were brothers, and they lived in this forest, and once there was a situation where they were under attack from some demon, and they chased him, and the demon went into a cave, and Bali entered into a cave, and Bali, he was very strong, and he said, close the cave with a rock. If I'm not coming back by a certain point in time, then you close this cave with a rock, because then you know I'm defeated. So anyway, he did so, but on the order of Bali. But it turned out Bali was not defeated. Bali was just locked in the cave. So he thought Bali was dead and everything, and then there, you know, Bali's widow was alone, and he was sort of taken care of her, and in due course of time, you know, as it goes in the monkey world, he remarried his brother's widow, right? Which was acceptable. But then later Bali came out of the cave and accused his brother of trying to kill him and stealing his wife and so on. So then they became sworn enemies. And there was a particular hill, his kingdom, where Bali couldn't go because he had been cursed. And if ever he would go there, that he would be killed. So daily, Bali would come every day and attack his brother. So his brother was hiding. He went in hiding on that hill. Bali could not come. And then Bali would daily fly in the sky, kick the head of Sugriva, his brother, and then jump off on the other side, just outside this area where he couldn't land. So his brother was having a constant headache. It was becoming a problem. Yeah. In this way, we see how the situation with Bali is unfolding. Now, I'm going back to the point of Ramachandra. Ramachandra is the emblem of Dharma. All throughout the Ramayana, he is just simply acting according to the principles of prescribed duty, of how a human being should act. He's the perfect example. The theme that comes up again and again is that even when the circumstances are unfavorable, and when it looks like following Dharma will just not bring any good results, he still follows it. When it looks that to not follow Dharma will be much better, no, he still follows Dharma. Throughout, you know, nothing can distract him from that. But then we get an interesting part in the Ramayana, and I just wanted to tell you that. This is the moment where apparently Ramachandra broke away from Dharma. Because what he did, he made a pact with Sugriva and finally agreed to kill Bali. So what he did, he hid himself behind a tree. And then, that day, when Bali came flying through the air and ready to kick the head of Ramachandra, the head of Sugriva, just then Ramachandra from behind a tree shot him in the back mercilessly with an arrow, and Bali crashed to the ground, and Bali just lying on his deathbed, his last moments, and Ramachandra appeared before him, and Bali just accused him and said, "How could you act like this, so low, as to fight, as to shoot your enemy, who did not even have a weapon, and shoot him from an ambush in the back? What kind of kshatriya are you? What kind of principles do you have?" And this is the moment where Ram is not acting so beautiful. You could call it, you know, I mean, the newspapers would jump on it and go like, "Ram exposed, you know." Fake after all, right? You know, finally, we knew it all along, you know. Sooner or later, they all go down, isn't it? Like Tiger Woods, you know, like, was such a hero and the perfect husband until he got exposed. Right? Ram exposed, yes? If there is anything in the Ramayana where Ram is exposed, it's there, where he shot Bali in the back. But then Lord Ramachandra, when accused by Bali himself, replied to Bali and said, No, Bali. He said, "Kshatriyas, yes, as a kshatriya, I fight openly with kshatriyas." He said, "But you are not a kshatriya. You are an animal. A wild animal." Yes. And when it comes to wild animals in hunting, then kshatriyas may hide and shoot their prey from hiding. And in that conversation, gradually, Bali began to understand. I am an animal not because I'm a monkey, but I'm an animal because I behave like an animal. You know what I mean? I have not behaved like a kshatriya. It was upon my own word that my brother closed the cave, but throughout I have simply acted like a wild animal. And it's true. So in the end, he accepted it. Yes, he accepted, yes. You are right. And once again, the reputation of Ramachandra has been saved. It's just tabloid newspapers. No truth whatsoever. He's complete. Ramachandra still stands. That's the final headline I read on the matter. Ramachandra cleared. Ramachandra completely cleared from all charges. Ramachandra came out clean. Once again, yes. So, in this way, the entire pastime continues. And we see that after that, it is up to Sugriva to keep, since Ram helped him, now Sugriva has the duty to repay Lord Ramachandra. He sends his monkey of armies down south to search out Sita. Anyway, they come to the very, very southern tip of India, known as Kanyakumari or Cape Comorin. And there, there's a mountain. And Sugriva had said, "Go south and find Sita, and otherwise don't bother to return." You know what I mean? I mean, if you don't return, as far as I'm concerned, you don't exist any longer. And they knew what that meant, you know. No coming back, finished. And so they had searched all the way to the south, everywhere, and they had not found Sita. So they decided to give up their lives. There's no point, you know. And they were lying on this mountain, fasting, and deciding to give up their life in this way. On that mountain, there lived a vulture. This vulture
this vulture was the elder brother of Jatayu. And once when Jatayu was young, Jatayu, being young and foolish, wanted to fly towards the sun. And he just went up in the direction of the sun. But his elder brother flew after him to protect him and covered him with his wings. But then the elder brother burned his wings and never flew again after that. So here he was. Had been there since a long time. Was hungry because vultures that don't fly don't eat that much. And then he's looking down on his hill and he's looking and there's food everywhere. He's going, oh, look at this. The whole hill is covered with food. I can't believe it. And then he sort of came walking down the hill, this huge vulture. And then the monkeys speak amongst themselves and say, oh, this is our destiny. Now we will be killed by this vulture. And Jatayu, before he died, he said that Sita was taken to the south, but somehow or other Jatayu's words are proven to be untrue. And then the elder vulture heard his food talking. And his food was saying, Jatayu died. And he spoke to his food and said, what do you mean? My brother has died? And then he told the full story and then he's like, vulture's guy. God, my bad luck, you know, my food is friends with my brother. Again, I have to fast. So in that way, it was tough. But he promised to help. And as we know, vultures have binocular eyes. It is said a vulture can look at a very long distance. So he was looking there with telescopic eyes. And soon he saw Sita on Lanka. He saw Sita on the island of Lanka. Well, there it begins. You know, all the monkeys start jumping. The first thing they did is they ate. They're monkeys after all. I mean, you know, monkeys and Hare Krishnas, they do that. It's like Satsarup Maharaj is writing that Lord Ramachandra had an army of monkeys to help him. He said, but Prabhupada had to do it with hippies from the Lower East Side. So, anyway, we're moving along. Hanuman is going to jump to Lanka. And he's just taking this huge jump across the ocean. And of course, there was this demoness whoever passed could pull them by their shadow, and like, you know, and then pull them into the mouth. And she had the benediction that whoever would enter her mouth, then she had the right to eat him. So anyway, it's like Hanuman is flying through the sky and suddenly something is pulling him, pulling his shadow and pulling him in. And he looks around and he sees this huge, gigantic mouth as enormous. So Hanuman also grew in size and became as big as the mouth. And the mouth became bigger. And Hanuman became bigger and the mouth became bigger. And Hanuman became bigger and the mouth became bigger. And Hanuman became bigger still. And the mouth became bigger. And suddenly Hanuman became very small. And Hanuman went into the mouth and went back out. Now went into your mouth. And Hanuman flew on and went to Lanka. When he came to Lanka, there was one demoness called Lanka Lakshmi who was guarding the walls of Lanka. She was actually cursed. Some say that she was a form of Bhadrakali. Others say that she was an associate of Brahma, Vijaya Lakshmi, but that she had been cursed. And forgotten her identity, but that one day she would be defeated by a monkey, and then she would remember that much she knew. All right, so, you know, Hanuman came to Lanka, and he sees how this huge female demoness is guarding the walls. So he disguised himself by taking a very small form, just as he's about to sneak inside, this voice comes, "Hey, where are you going?" "Oh, I'm just a little monkey. I'm hungry. I want to eat some fruits from the trees." "No, you're not coming in." "Well, nobody comes in here. I'm in charge." And Hanuman said, "You can't talk to me like that. I mean, you can't talk to me like that. You know, do you know who I am? I am Hanuman." And she said, "Well, what are you going to do to me?" He said, "Oh, you'll see what I will do to you. You know." He said, "You lift me up, yeah, and I'll give you a slap." She did it. And this little monkey gave her the slap of her life. Because although he was small, still very powerful. So she went unconscious. But then when she came back to consciousness, Hanuman was already inside. But she got defeated by a monkey. And then she remembered who she was and returned to her original place. So Hanuman is inside. And then, then he was checking it out. And then there's this palaces, ravenous golden palaces, full of beautiful ladies. And it's night and they're all sleeping. And Hanuman is just roaming around the beds, between the beds, looking, you know, which one's Sita. I mean, it's a beautiful princess. There's a million beautiful princesses here, you know, I mean, which one is it? I was looking, is that Sita? Everywhere Sita, couldn't figure it out, which one was Sita. But eventually, he found Sita. In that Ashoka grove, he was hiding in the tree, and he just came when Ravana, he was just hidden in the tree when Ravana came and gave Sita an ultimatum, that if she wouldn't surrender soon, that he would give orders to these lady Rakshasas who were always harassing her. And always telling them to cook her and serve her for breakfast. So it was getting serious as an ultimatum. Ravana got cursed. Once he took a woman by force, and he was cursed that if he ever would do that again, that he would die. Therefore, he could not take her by force. So he had to somehow convince Sita to voluntary surrender. That was a big problem. Hanuman came after Ravana left, appeared before Sita, and she said, "Like, Ravana, what is this? Now you appear to me like in front of me like a monkey? What kind of trick is this?" But he had a ring of Ram. He said, "No, no." So then she could see he's a messenger of Ram. And, on the way out, Hanuman got captured, killed a few generals and a bit of the army, and subsequently they wanted to take revenge and set his tail on fire, and with them Hanuman took advantage of that and burned down half the city of Lanka before he went back home. So, he had a good time in his little excursion in Lanka. And then, of course, comes the time of the bridge, the floating rocks with the name of Ram on it, and the bridge to Lanka, and everyone throwing in boulders, and Hanuman throwing in a whole mountain, and a spider throwing in little crumbs, and Hanuman saying, "Hey, you spider, get out of my way. Can't you see I'm doing some work here? I'm building a bridge, you know what I mean? You're throwing crumbs." "No," Lord Ramachandra said, "Hanuman, as far as I'm concerned, both of you are equal. Because both of you are working with full your might, with all your might. So it's whatever you are, spider or animal. Anyway, the battle unfolded, the terrible battle, really a terrible battle. What shall I say about the battle? I guess I'll just jump straight to Kumbhakarna. There were days of fighting and so many. But somehow or other, these monkeys could not be defeated. So Ravana had a brother, and the brother's name was Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakarna had performed terrible austerities. And Kumbhakarna was a real intense person. He was enormous. And he had performed austerities that anyone could be defeated by him, but somehow or other, the demigods could see he's going to get too powerful. They entered into his tongue and they made him say the wrong word, a little slip of the tongue, and as a result, the meaning of the words changed, and he got the benediction that he would be put to sleep. So then, this is not fair. This is not fair. You know, that was cheating. So it was finally agreed that he would sleep most of the time, but you know, there were periods that he was awake for a short time. And when he was awake, he would devour enormous quantities of food. So during the battle, they had to awake him, although it was not the time. So they had to somehow or other awake him. So they tried everything. They had huge drums next to his ears and horns and whole armies, making incredible noise. Nothing worked. They put huge quantities of flesh under his nose to wake his appetite, you see. And then, finally nothing worked. Finally it was an enormous form. They made a fire on his chest. And then he woke up. And as he woke up, he immediately ate all that food plus the men that were offering it. He ate them all. Kumbhakarna woke up. He finally woke up. And when he went on the battlefield, it was just inconceivable. I mean, he was eating monkeys like potato chips. It was just like throwing them handfuls in his mouth. It was horrendous. So the monkeys ran in all directions. But ultimately, even Kumbhakarna was defeated. He was also defeated. It was just shocking. And then all these monkeys were brought back to life. The most dangerous enemy after Ravana was his son Indrajit. Because Indrajit, he did not have just brutal force like Kumbhakarna, but he was having many benedictions. He was performing all kinds of pujas, and ultimately one becomes more powerful through worship than through mere muscle. Yes. So he became more powerful. And Indrajit had even conquered Indra. Anyway, we know that a battle ensued between him and Laxman. Laxman became so severely injured in that Hanuman was sent to this mountain to get this herb. But it's not easy to find herbs. I sympathize with Hanuman. When I was in school, they sent us out with a list of herbs that we had to take and a book, And the book, through the book you could sort of check out what the herb was. But the picture in the book and the real herb never looked the same to me. It was different, Is it this one or not? So Hanuman also was lost. But then Hanuman is glorious that he brought the whole mountain. Yeah.
He didn't just bring her, he brought her home. He was not defeated. So those are like the highlights of the last. And then finally, Lord Ramachandra, riding on Hanuman, on Hanuman actually. Hanuman was the carrier of the Lord, better than Garuda, stronger than Garuda. Hanuman carried Lord Ramachandra. And then Ravana called the fire brigade, but it was too late. No, there was no avail. Then Ravana was killed in the sky. He was shot down. So the end of the battle over. And there's a story where Sita is in the Ashoka Grove, and she's still there. The battle is won, and it's Hanuman who goes there, and it's Hanuman who comes, and he sees Sita there, and she's surrounded by these Rakshasis, and Hanuman says, "The battle is won. The battle is won. Ravana is dead." But meanwhile, she's still being harassed by these Rakshasis. So Hanuman says, "I'll just kill these Rakshasis and then we can go." And she says, "No, Hanuman, no." He says, "No, it's no problem for me. I'll do it in a snap." He says, "No, Hanuman, no." And then Sita tells a story to Hanuman. And she says, "You know, Hanuman, once there was a hunter and he was hunting in the forest. And as he was hunting in the forest, the hunter was killing one animal after another. But then suddenly in one bush he came across a tiger. And then the roles got reversed. Instead of the hunter chasing the animals, the animal was chasing the hunter. Hunter running for his life, tiger on his heels. He came to a tree, he climbed in a tree. Up in the tree, there was a bear." Oh my God, between a bear and a tiger. What to do? Then the tiger began to speak, and the tiger said to the bear, "You see that man? He's a hunter. He's our mutual enemy. Kick him down, and I will devour him." "No," the bear said, "I can't do that, because he has come as my guest. And I must give him shelter." Then the tiger said to the hunter, he said, "You see that bear? If you kick him down, I'll eat him instead of you." The hunter immediately kicked down the bear, and the bear was falling. And somehow, around the last minute, the bear grabbed the branch, climbed back up in the tree. And the tiger again spoke to the bear and said, "Just see. See that treacherous man. You gave him shelter and he kicked you down. I'm telling you, kick him down again right now. Kick him now before he does it to you." "No," said the bear, "I can't do that. The fact that he misbehaves doesn't justify that I will also misbehave. He has still come to my home. It's my duty to give him shelter." So, therefore Sita, after explaining that story to Hanuman, she told him, no, they may have misbehaved, but that just doesn't justify that we will misbehave. Let them go. So, right, Hanuman didn't kill the Rakshasis, let them go, and took Sita and brought her before Ram. And now comes the moment where Sita and Ram are reunited, and it should have been the happy end of the Ramayana. But it's not happening. The end is not the end, because Ram, instead of being happy, he's cold and disinterested, and tells Sita, "You are free now. You are free to go." Say this, how can you say that? After all that, after such a huge battle, after all the suffering, sending her away. Anyway,
the Vedic injunction is that a woman who stayed the night in the house of another man cannot be taken back. But Sita enters into fire to prove her chastity. She calls upon fire and says, and if I am pure, if I am untouched, may I then come out of this fire untouched? And she enters into the fire and comes again out of the fire untouched. So then they are reunited. And Ram is very pleased, and Sita is very pleased, and they go in a plane to Ayodhya. It's a huge celebration, and everything is ready, and they're on the throne, and everything is wonderful. And then, as kings do, one day Ram goes in disguise into the kingdom to check out what is sort of living among the people. And then there is a domestic fight. A husband and a wife are fighting severely. And a big, big argument, and the husband stands in front of the door and says to his wife, "You're not coming back in, no way. I am not like this Ramachandra who takes back his wife after she's been away for a night. Forget it. You stayed the night in another man's house, that's it. I'm not taking you back. Finished." Yes. So when Ramachandra heard this, his heart broke to a thousand pieces because he realized that he had to give up Sita. So he sends Sita away. Sita left, and Sita then went to the ashram of Valmiki. And the great sage Valmiki gave shelter to Sita, who was at that time expecting from Ramachandra. And she gave birth to two sons, twins. And these twins, they grew up in the ashram of Valmiki. And meanwhile, Valmiki wrote down the entire Ramayana. And these two boys, Lav and Kush, they memorized the entire pastimes of the Ramayana. And then as they were grown up, young boys, then one day there was a great sacrifice being performed by Lord Ramachandra. And he invited various sages, and he also invited Valmiki. And Valmiki came, and he brought Lav and Kush, the two sons. But of course Ramachandra didn't know they were his sons. And these boys began to recite the entire Ramayana, 24,000 verses. Took many days, and they were just daily reciting all these amazing pastimes. Everyone was just amazed, and everyone was just thinking when they saw them. They just, these boys reminded of Ram. Who are they? And you know, who are these amazing boys? And gradually, Lord Ramachandra asked them, where had they learned all these amazing pastimes and verses? And they said they had learned it from Valmiki, who had heard everything from their mother, Sita. So then Ramachandra just like, oh God. He realized they were his sons. So he embraced his sons, and it just ripped open all the old wounds, because he had constantly been remembering Sita. The most painful thing for him was to send away Sita. Now he could not tolerate it any longer. Hearing that she was alive, he just asked the sage Valmiki to please bring Sita. And Sita came. Sita came to meet Lord Ramachandra at that time. And she was there. And she had never for a moment, even although she had been exiled by him, she had never abandoned him. She was still completely faithful to him and still worshipping him. Then Lord Ramachandra said, let us Let us reunite. Let us reunite. But Sita could not do it anymore. And Sita just said out loud, she said, if I have been pure and innocent from the time of my birth, if I have been dedicated only to my Lord Ramachandra, then now let me return to the earth from where I was born. Then now may that earth accept me once again. And then the earth opened, and a golden throne appeared, and Sita sat down on that golden throne and disappeared in the earth. And after that, Lord Ramachandra knew no more happiness in this world. The end.
Man.
It's too much. I tell you, the Ramayana is just too much. It's just too much. The end is just too much. It's too much. This Dharma is just too much. It's too much to sacrifice everything for Dharma. How can he sacrifice his love for Dharma? It's too much. It's too much. But he did. Everything for Dharma. Everything. Lord Ramachandra is still being worshipped today. Lord Ramachandra came to teach the world this Dharma. But then returned as Krishna. And in the incarnation of Krishna, the Supreme Lord shows that he places love above Dharma. Love higher than Dharma. Love the highest. Love is everything. Krishna sometimes breaks Dharma. When he had given his word not to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, when Bhishmadev was about to kill Arjuna, suddenly Krishna took up a wagon wheel and was ready to fight. Break his word. Because love before Dharma. It is said that Lord Ramachandra comes in this world to teach us Krishna. Lord Ramachandra comes to teach us how we should act. Krishna comes to teach us how God acts. In his own divine pastimes. Whereas Lord Ramachandra comes to teach how human beings should act. And this is the difference between the incarnation of Lord Ramachandra and Lord Krishna. Oh, what a story this Ramayana. What a story. So, would anyone like to add something? Ask a question. Sita Ram.
The unadulterated sweetness of his lilas has many oceanic meanings to those of us who are connected to the realm of Bhagavad Dharma. And for us, to hear such a story in its ineffable sweetness is not very difficult. But for the average citizens of this world, as we know, are captured by the external energy. Many of them, many of the religions, have only one God, one scripture, and one ideology to understand. This kind of simplifies life for them, as confused as they are. How are we going to present such a vast litany of expansions and make them understand the omnipotency of God and bring them to a level where they can gracefully accept His powers?
It is clear that this is a superhuman task, and that we alone are standing before this great, great challenge to convince people of the majestic nature of the Lord's pastimes and appearance in unlimited forms. Only by invoking the mercy of the Lord can it be done. Therefore, we know that there's nothing we can say. Just like Prabhupada, when he was in America on the Boston Pier, in New York, it's called the Boston Pier because the ships come from Boston. And Prabhupada wrote a poem called Markini Bhagavad Dharma. And in that poem he's saying, there is nothing I can say. There's not a word I can think of to convince these people other than your words. And then Prabhupada faithfully begins to quote various verses, selected verses, Srimadha, Swakata, Krishna, Punya, Sarada, Kirtan, Ridhyanta, Stohya, Vidhina, Vidunati, Sritsata. He is quoting how hearing about Krishna enters into the heart, destroys all inauspiciousness. So Prabhupada puts Krishna in the foreground and knows that Krishna will do it. So it's not us who will convince by argument and reason. We may try, Prabhupada certainly tried, but the substance is that these descriptions about the Supreme Lord themselves are full of potency. And let them act, let the name of the Lord act, let the pastimes of the Lord act upon the hearts of conditioned souls. Because we can see the depth of the Ramayana. What compares to that? You know, take the great classics of this world, the Ilias and the Odyssey, and there, you know, Achilles is going to war in Troy, basically because someone took his girlfriend. It's ready to throw nations into war over the fact that someone took his beloved. But here, it is a mundane story. But here we're seeing the most noble behavior. The Ramayana is just so noble. The character of Sita Ram is so noble. It's inconceivable. And it's like, just like that moment when Hanuman wasn't meant to kill the Rakshasis, the noble bear. It is Sita who is noble, obviously. A noble Sita. No sense of revenge. No, Hanuman. Lord Ramachandra, so noble, banned to the forest, smiling. Lost the kingdom, not affected. Fair, kind, merciful. It's just, the Ramayana is an ocean of good qualities. So anyone who hears it is going to be touched by the caliber of this literature. It will speak for itself. Yeah. Oh. Yes.
And on the other hand, also, we are also fortunate that we can be here and hear glories of Vrindavan. And the people who don't come aren't necessarily interested. But Prabhupada has given us a secret weapon, prasadam. So, you know, if we want people to come to the caliber of wanting to hear about the glories of the Lord, we need to distribute prasadam.
Yeah, distribute prasadam and the holy name, Harinam Sankirtan, everywhere. And then the books. These are the three things. Harinam Sankirtan, change the holy name, book distribution, and prasada distribution. And through these three, this movement will spread. Like, here's our Gaura Karuna from Europe. He has a little bicycle and he travels around the world somehow or other, and not a day goes by that he doesn't go out and distribute books.
So if you get a book from him, not only do you get a book, he gives a CD as well for free, isn't it? A little donation. So you can buy a book from Gaura Karuna, get some prasadam from Mother Pasuti and Raj, and Gaura Karuna's friend Vishnu Jan will take you on Harinam anytime. Very nice. Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful class. Isn't when Lord Ramachandra decided to come down, Krishna always comes with his associates, and because Ravana had some benediction that he couldn't be defeated by demigods, but he wasn't worried about humans and monkeys and animals, that he didn't bother to get that benediction. So no. Lord Ram told all the demigods to come and to have their children in the monkeys, so yeah. That he was kind of preparing for the eventual battle with Ravana.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, there are so many background stories, There are background stories to the background stories. And this morning also, Shananda also had another background story. And they show these stories that actually the whole thing is a divine plan and a divine design. And there are so many aspects to it, One aspect is Lord Ramachandra was using monkeys because Ravana had forgotten to take a benediction, against humans and animals, right? But we also worship him as Patita Pavan Rajaram, as the one who gives shelter to even monkeys, to the most fallen. So that's again another aspect of the monkeys. So yes, it is very rich. So yeah, your point is heading to another additional insight. The Ramayana is full of that, full of treasures.